since I had kept riding to the gas station, I was like, I guess I can keep riding still. It immediately just got super hard and my hand was killing me. And eventually I just like sat down on the side of the cow pasture and I just like cried my eyes out for a little bit there, because I think I kind of came to the realization that I was going to finish this ride and I was determined to finish it. But I also knew just like how hard it was going to be and how deep I was going to have to go to actually do that. It all just kind of sunk in.
It's showtime, everybody. Showtime.
You've been living in a dream world, Neo. This is the world as it exists today.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
Listen, we talking about practice.
Hey, Pete, on the dude's rug.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hello, Adventure Stash family, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited about today's show. We have lots more awesome storytelling thanks to Amanda Nauman and Will Lovner. Yes, these two did really well on the results sheet. They both finished second at Unbound XL, but that was purely coincidental. I wanted to talk to these two folks because they had some really awesome storytelling for us. Amanda, for example, is a veteran of the 200-mile distance, but decided to upgrade to the 357-mile this year, and I wanted to know why. And I also wanted to know how the 200, which she's won in the past, compares to the 350 in terms of difficulty, where it takes your mind, where it takes your body, how they might compare and contrast culturally. And then I wanted to talk to Will because he just had potentially the most insane race survival story I've ever heard. He broke his arm during the race, had rhabdo, unbelievable dehydration, and pushed through and not only finished, but held off an incredible field of really star-studded ultra racers to maintain his second place position. We've gotten some feedback on social media that we're glorifying dangerous behavior in regards to what he did to his health to finish this race and finish it fast. But to be totally honest, I disagree with that. I don't think very many folks are capable of taking themselves to the place that Will took himself, let alone pushing through all that. To me, it's a little bit like the Alex Honnold free soloing conversation where, you know, he caught flack for quote unquote glorifying dangerous climbing, free soloing. But I think the truth of the matter is most people that get 10 feet off the ground on a wall without a rope, they're going to come back down. And I feel like the same goes for this conversation that I had with Will. People are going to call the sag wagon. Will is not. And that's why y'all need to know about him. This kid is coming for ultra racing unlike I've ever seen. I mean, let's just say I don't want to race him. Hope you enjoy this conversation with these two super badass athletes. Quick shout out to Swiss RX. They're the presenting sponsor of today's episode, as they have been the last three episodes. Y'all will be familiar with some of their product offerings at this point and their philosophies, why I've decided to pick Swiss RX as my supplement partner. But I have really good news for y'all. I have a 30% off discount code. The code is Payson, capital P-A-Y-S-O-N, or you can just go to swissrx.cc/Payson, get yourself 30% off whatever you want. Big thank you to Swiss RX for supporting this show, for supporting my racing goals, my health goals. Whatever you need, just go to swissrx.cc/Payson, get yourself 30% off. Thank you all so much for listening, and I will catch you at the end of the show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man.
How the heck are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I got the splint on my arm and just got some stitches on it, got some more x-rays and found out that I broke a bone in there. But yeah, just recovering right now, getting a lot of rest and drinking a lot of liquids too. So
dude, you are
feeling better though. I'm feeling human again.
You are a crazy man. I have to admit, like I wasn't aware of you until your ride at the Unbound XL, and I wasn't aware of your story until Michelle Duffy at Lifetime clued me in. But I have so many mm-hmm. questions. I mean, you obviously your performance, and especially under the circumstances, is unique. But also, just you're 23, right?
Do I have that right? 23 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's correct. Also very unique. And so I have a lot of questions for you, and I'm excited that we were able to cool. jump on this quickly. Since it seems like you're newer onto the scene, I feel like we should maybe set a little bit of groundwork. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from, your interest in ultra and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I actually started out I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I started out as a runner, like starting in middle school and high school. And then I ran for Penn State doing cross country and track my first 2 years of college. And then I kind of got into mountain biking the summer after my sophomore year and just like completely fell in love with it. And it really like lit the fire for me again. So I started mountain biking and just like got in local races in the series around Pittsburgh. And then the next summer I got into ultra running. So I did like a couple 70 mile runs and like some 30 mile mountaineer sort of runs out in Seattle when I went there for the summer. And so when I got back to the East Coast, I kind of like mixed the two together and like started getting into the ultra riding. And then ever since then, I started doing like 100 mile mountain bike races and then just like doing stupid long rides all the time. So like I did a single track Everest last fall, and then also like a 300 mile mountain bike ride this spring. So just been going all in with that stuff.
Holy cow. You're maybe the only other person I know that's done a single track Everesting. I did one of those back in May of last year. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I saw the video. That was sick.
What terrain did you do it on?
Yeah, so it was all single track. It kind of is in Rots Rock State Forest, which is up in State College, PA. And it's kind of like smooth, flowy stuff for the first part. And then it goes up into like some rockier, steeper stuff near the top. And it was a 400 foot climb, and it was about a mile like total going up and down. So each lap took me about 15 minutes, and it took me like 18 and a half hours to do. But yeah, it was definitely my hardest ride up to that point for sure. Just because like, I'm sure you know doing it too, just you can't lose focus at all the whole 18 hours. So yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
It was sick though.
I actually, Rothrock rings a bell because I've done the Transylvania Epic a couple of times back in the day. And yeah, I think they used some of that terrain, if I remember correctly.
I just did the Transylvania Epic finishing last week.
Wait, so you raced Transylvania Epic a week ago?
Yeah, it was on like May 25th. I raced it. And it was a 5-day event. But yeah, just did that and then was home for a couple days and then headed out to Kansas.
Jeez, dude, that is a hell of a training camp right before 350.
Yeah, seriously. Yep.
Okay, so it's starting to make a little more sense for me in regards to why you're already into ultra, because one of the things that immediately caught my interest is that you're so young and you're already interested in this ultra stuff, this bike packing stuff. And it seems like that's a little bit unusual. I mean, I know bike packing and ultra racing is growing in popularity very quickly, but you know, it generally rewards experience and it rewards age to an extent, just because you have more miles in your legs. But the fact that you come from an ultra running background makes a lot of sense. It's really cool. Do you think that you'll continue down this path of kind of ultra distance off-road cycling? Is that really where you want to set your sights and set your goals, or will you kind of diversify and do some shorter events as well in the future?
Yeah, I think I definitely want to just focus on doing ultra stuff. So like I haven't really got into bike packing yet. I've mainly been doing like one day big rides or like 24 hours type stuff. But in the future, I do think I want to kind of branch off into bike packing as well as just like the big one day rides. And yeah, I think that's kind of just where my future is. And like you said, there really isn't that many young guys in it. It's a lot of older people that are more experienced. So yeah, I'm not quite sure why that is, but that's really kind of what my passion is for, is the long stuff.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I think part of it is it requires taking care of yourself. And I think that takes a certain level of like maturity. And it's so, I've only done a little bit, so I'm not by no means an authority on it. But to me, it's so hard that I feel like younger athletes, sometimes they don't necessarily have like the same mental strength or grit, or at least not in the same way. And so that was another thing that really made me interested in your story, is the fact that A, you were doing the 350 at a very young age, but B, you had something go terribly wrong and it didn't seem like you had any interest in throwing in the towel. Like, you were committed. And that takes a certain level of just like maturity and grit, from what I can tell. Can you talk a little bit about that experience? Walk us through your 350 day.
Yeah. I'll kind of give you the recap. So it kind of started out and the pack pretty quickly like whittled down to about like five guys, and we were just all cruising together through the first gas station at mile 40. And then it kind of slowly whittled down to me, Taylor Ledeen, and Jay Peterberry. And we rode into the night together and made it to the first gas station stop at 107, or the second gas station stop at 117 miles. And after that stop, we totally refueled, and me and Taylor were feeling pretty good. So we went out ahead, and Jay kind of fell back a little bit, and Taylor and I worked together and made it. We decided to just kind of work together through the night. And it was at about 3 a.m. when it started to go really wrong for me. It was 200 miles in. I was descending down this pretty rutted out gravel road with some big chunky gravel on the side. And my front tire just kind of caught the edge of the rut. And I just got flung down super, super hard onto like my left arm and my hand and stuff. And so my arm was bleeding really bad, and my hand went completely numb, like as soon as the crash happened. So I knew something like bad happened right away. And I was kind of laying there for a while, and Taylor stopped and made sure I was okay. And I got up and like I could walk, and I didn't hit my head or anything, fortunately. So I was fine. And so he went and rode ahead. There was a gas station at 216 miles. So he went and told them that I crashed. And I just started walking towards the gas station, and then eventually I got back on my bike and I started riding there, and it felt like forever, but eventually I made it to the gas station. It was probably around like 5 a.m. It was still dark out. So that whole ordeal happened in the dark, just in the middle of nowhere too, which was pretty wild. But I made it to the gas station. My arm was bleeding really bad, and the pain in my hand, it went from being numb to it like really started to settle in. And I got there, and I hadn't stopped in the previous 100 miles, so I was, like, really hungry and was out of liquid. So I stopped and got a pizza and ice cream and a Fanta, and I just sat on the curb for a while and crushed all that food. And I got the cashier working at 5 a.m. to tape up my arm with, like, some duct tape that she had sitting around pretty much to stop the bleeding. She was, like, she could not believe what she was getting into at 5 a.m. She wasn't really happy about it. But after that, I was like, since I had kept riding to the gas station, I was like, I guess I can keep riding still. So I just started off. I left the gas station, and that's when it started getting hot. Like, as soon as the sun came up, I mean, you know, from racing out there, there's no shade and you're just getting beat down by the sun. So it immediately just got super hard, and my hand was killing me. I had no grip in my hand, so like I could kind of rest it on the bar, but I couldn't grip the bar with my left hand or use my brake. So what I did was I would rest it on the bar until I came up to bumps, and then I would take my left hand off and I'd ride all the bumps with just my right hand because the pain was just too much. So I was just like crawling down all of the descents. I couldn't go fast at all because riding one-handed down it, I knew I'd crash again, and like that was the last thing I would need. But pretty soon I started getting like dehydrated from not being able to, I wasn't drinking enough because I couldn't take my right hand off to grab my bottle, and that kind of started catching up to me. So I was getting like pretty delirious and like started seeing stuff and just like seeing figures and on those empty dirt roads. And so it was getting pretty crazy. And eventually I just like sat down. I was climbing this long grassy It was like foot high grass, just following this like cow pasture for 10 miles. And I just like sat down on the side of the cow pasture and I just like cried my eyes out for a little bit there, because like, I think I kind of came to the realization that I was going to finish this ride and I was determined to finish it. But I also knew just like how hard it was going to be and how deep I was going to have to go to actually do that. And then after that, like I was determined to finish and I just kind of kept on going. And the whole time, miraculously, nobody passed me. So I was still in second place. So I was just like, that kind of got my spirits up. And I was just like, make it to the next water stop at 280 miles, made it there. And at first I couldn't even find the water stop because it was just in somebody's backyard. And like, I literally thought I was going to die for a second, but I was able to find it and like, and refill. And then I was just like, make it to the gas station at 311. So I made it to the gas station at 311 miles, had one more stop to fill up. And then after that, it was pretty cool because I didn't realize that the 350 mile course like kind of intersects with the 100 mile and the 200 mile course. So the 100 mile riders were finishing. So there was like a lot of riders there and they probably thought I was crazy because I was like screaming in pain like every time I'd hit a bump, which on those roads is like every 10 feet. And but like I got in the last 20 miles and just like kept going and eventually made it to the finish line. And once I made it to the finish, it kind of like started to sink in just like how deep I went to get it done. And then it sunk in even more when I got to the emergency room and I realized I thought there was like structural damage in my hand or arm. And I realized that my hand was broken after some x-rays and got some stitches in my arm. And it also, I had rhabdomyolysis, which your muscle starts to break down into your bloodstream. So they were like, they were happy I came in because they're most worried about the rhabdo stuff. But so I spent the night in the ER and like, I was just sitting there. I was like, wow, it all just kind of sunk in what happened.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God. it's not very frequently that I'm lost for words, but like that's one of the most insane things I've heard. All I can say is I never want to race you. Like, holy shit, dude, if I'm a competitor in a field with you, I'm afraid because I know that like nothing is going to stop you. That is insane. Why did you just decide? Well, also another thing I can tell you right now, you are cut out for bike pack racing because from what I can tell, you have to be as crazy as you are to win those races. Why did you just decide that you like quitting wasn't an option?
Yeah, I think what it was like, so I made it to that gas station 16 miles after my crash and like I could still pedal my bike. So there never was a point where like I couldn't make one more pedal stroke or like I couldn't make it to the next turn. So if I ever did quit, like I would have had to make a conscious decision and been like, all right, I literally can't pedal anymore or something. Like, well, if I did quit, I would have had to been like, just, I could have kept pedaling, but I would have had to just give into it. And, so I just like never got to that point. And so if I ever did quit, I felt like I wouldn't be able to live with like just the disappointment of knowing that I could have gone further. So I just like kept pushing and like I kept making it farther and farther. So yeah.
Unbelievable. Do you have any loved ones that were just like super angry with you after all this?
Yeah, my parents were like, what the hell were you doing? But they couldn't believe it. They're like,
incredible. Man, that's just mind-boggling. And the fact that you still finished second, like I'm just still trying to wrap my head around just all of the circumstances here. Absolutely insane. And if you had to get stitches in your arm, like you must have just been bleeding like nobody's business also.
Yeah, it was bleeding really bad. That's why I thought my arm, like initially when the crash happened, I thought my arm was broke just because it was like bleeding super heavily. And for the rest of the ride, it was bleeding a lot. But like, fortunately, that gas station attendant kind of saved me with that late night tape job. So yeah, that kind of slowed it down a little bit. But yeah.
So what's the drive here? I mean, so I just finished recording with Amanda Nauman, who finished second in the women's 350. And because I finished recording right before you, I thought I'd ask if she had a question for you. And the question, I didn't anticipate that the question would be so perfect, but it's kind of like distilling it all down. This is the number one question I want to ask you too. And it's basically like, what's the driver here? Like, why, like you, that performance, that was a performance where it seemed like you were just kind of possessed and you knew you weren't going to win. I have to assume like the win was out of reach. And so that wasn't what was driving you. So what's the, can you put your finger on that at this point?
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like everybody had a driver going into riding 350 miles. Like, I couldn't believe that there was 120 other people that wanted to actually even start that race. But I feel like the driver for everybody and for me is just like the challenge of doing that sort of distance. It's not as much like competing against other people. Because you know, there's so many variables that could happen that could cause you like not to be in position to win. So it's more just like battling against yourself and kind of like finding yourself when it starts to get super hard and just like how you're going to react, if you're going to be able to keep pushing through, like when situations arise, because for nobody, like it's just smooth sailing the whole time. So you kind of have to like deal with those situations and just dig super deep. Like I had no clue that I was going to have to dig as deep as I did, but, it's just like the difficulty of it all that keeps bringing me back.
Yeah. Do you want to go back after all that? Do you feel like you have unsettled business?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'll definitely be back next year. I mean, that was one of the coolest events I've ever done and was like, I mean, I hope the next year my experience isn't the same as this year, but it still was like incredible experience and saw a lot of really cool stuff on it. So I'll be back for sure.
Yeah. You probably feel like you can just run through a brick wall at this point after that past experience. Do you have any other goals on the horizon? I mean, obviously you have some time to, or you have to take some time to heal up at this point, but, what did you have on the, or what do you have on the calendar for the rest of the year?
Yeah. So I have the, 24-hour mountain bike national championships in July. That's in Bend, Oregon. So my goal is to recover in time for that. The doctor said it was going to be like 6 weeks and that race is in 4 weeks, but I'm hoping that I'll be good to go for that. And then I'm doing some other like 100-mile mountain bike races, as well as doing like the Belgian waffle ride race in Asheville, North Carolina. And then I think this fall, just planning like some big epic rides. So there's like this ride called the Vermont Super 8, which is a 600-mile gravel ride up in Vermont that I might try to go for the FKT on, and some other stuff like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you have any inspirations in the cycling world? Any folks that you look to and are really impressed or inspired by?
Yeah. Like I kind of what got me into this sort of alternative racing was watching those like Lachlan Morton videos on him just doing like the alternative calendar. And like, I didn't really realize that I thought all racing was just like super competitive and super cutthroat, but there's like also this whole other side of it where you're just like doing stuff just for fun and just to like challenge yourself. So yeah, he's definitely an inspiration for that.
Yeah. Lachlan is the man. I mean, beyond his physical achievements, I just love his kind of punk rock approach. It's definitely way cool. Sweet, man. Well, this was a pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time and Man, bike racing world, especially ultra racing world, should be on notice because Will is coming and nothing is going to stop him. Very cool.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Is there anything else that you had on your mind that you think would be interesting for folks to hear? Any other topics you want to touch on before we sign off here?
I feel like we covered it all. That was good.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for taking the time. I'm an instant fan. I'll be following. Maybe we'll cross over at an event or two later in the year, but I'll definitely be keeping an eye on what you get up to. Keep up the good work.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Yep. Have a good one.
See ya.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Happy to be home. How are you feeling?
Good. I'm fine now. Yeah, yesterday was the worst day. I just felt like I needed to sleep all day. But besides that, I feel surprisingly better than I thought. I thought I was going to be completely destroyed, but one thing I've realized is maybe it means I'm softer than everybody else, but I'm like really good at taking care of myself. Like the places I saw some people put themselves, I was like, I think I like myself more than you guys. Like I took care of myself out there.
During the race you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give an example?
Well, one of my friends at the finish line was super out of it. His name is Scott Widoff. He's from NorCal.
Yeah, I know Scott well.
Yeah, he was like way out of it, Payson, to the point that I was telling his girlfriend, like, you need to take him to the hospital. Like the EMTs even checked his vitals, and it turns out his kidneys like were starting to fail, and he ended up going to the ER later.
Scott, I literally saw him at the coffee shop the day after the race, and he said nothing about that.
No.
He was like, yeah, it was a great experience. I was like, good.
He destroyed himself. Like, I finished half an hour after him, and we, like, took a picture together. We were talking, and he was like, Amanda, you did so good. You finished ahead of me. I was like, Scott, I just finished. Like, where are you right now? Yeah, so he was out of it.
Wow. So anyway, basically what we're doing here is we're going to do two, maybe three sort of recap episodes.
Okay.
And the reason I wanted to talk to you is because you're such a veteran of the 200, and have had lots of success there, but then crossed over into this 350 realm, which I think is a little bit of new territory for you. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to hear stories, and I wanted to know why you did it, how it compared, what you learned, because I think you're one of the few people that can speak to that. I don't know that there are many people that had a lot of success at the 200 and then just dove into this 350. And obviously, I mean, you had a very successful 350 as well, but I'm just curious about all the experiential stuff and comparing and contrasting the two. So that's why I wanted to chat. So I guess first official question might be why you decided to change events.
Yeah, so when you finish five of the 200, you get into what they call the 1,000-mile club, and you get an award, the Gravel Grail. And I remember, like, either my first or second time there, they invited all the five-time finishers up to the stage. And at the time, there were only a handful, like less than 10, because the event was still so young. And then gradually every year, it felt like there were more and more people that got up on that stage to get the award. And so I probably after the fourth one, third one, I was like, I'm going to do that. I want to at least finish five of these. And so in 2019, I finished my fifth one. And I think, you know, at that point, you're like, okay, what's the next challenge? And Rebecca had done the 350 in the inaugural one, I believe. And so I think she kind of set that precedence for me of like, okay, that's the next challenge. That's maybe the next thing that you do. And yeah, it was scary, but it was something that the story that I tell is when I went to go do the first 200, it was like an adventure, this scary thing that I didn't know that I could finish. And yeah, like I said, it just scared me. And so I think looking at the 350, it brought me back to that same feeling of, I don't even know if I can do it. And that's a feeling I like. I like that challenge and being able to tackle something that is very scary. So yeah, I did it.
How did it compare overall? I mean, we can get a little more specific in a minute, but did it shock you in terms of how different it was, or did it actually feel more similar than you expected?
The first 6 hours until about dark felt very similar because it was a race. We were going hard. I was going as hard as I probably would have at the beginning of the 200. And that surprised me. It really honestly surprised me. I saw Matt Stevens at the start and he was like, "Hey, Amanda," I'm like, "Hey, Matt, please don't go hard. I don't want to do that at the beginning of this. We have a long day." And he's like, "Don't worry, it's not going to be me." And so I thought, okay, if Matt tones it back, maybe the rest of the guys will. And that was not the case. Everybody just went full throttle. Jay Peterberry was on the front, just going as hard as he could. So in that sense, it was very similar, not what I expected. And then I think the rest of it, after the sun went down, we watched the sun actually set. It was very different and in its own world of, just not survival, but it's a different kind of pedaling than it is for the 200, where you can still go hard for kind of that length of time. But then for the 350, you get to the point of like just pedaling as much as you can, and that's not hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Going into it, did you do any specific preparation outside of what you'd do for the 200?
Yeah, I did. I think if I had been doing the 200, it would have been more of a focus on fitness and a little bit more high intensity and some more traditional things that I would have focused on. And so the biggest difference for this event was practicing things outside of my comfort zone, like riding at night, riding in the aero bars, which I don't do ever, and doing long rides on like the river trail where I don't have to stop and I'm and in the aero position that whole time. So just doing things that were different. Like I would start interval rides in the afternoon after work instead of before in the morning, and trying to be able to go hard later in the day was an experience, and I realize I'm not good at it, nor do I like it. So just working things in differently than I would have prioritized fitness in the past. This was more of like, I need to figure out these experiments, I guess, just to find what works for me in these weird scenarios.
Yeah. What did you find most challenging about the problem solving nature of a distance like this? Was it like charging electronics, keeping yourself fueled, riding at night? What were some of the things that it could be stuff that you felt like was a challenge in terms of preparation and proved a challenge during the event, or maybe even surprise challenges that arose?
Yeah, the whole event, it becomes like a puzzle. How are you prioritizing things? What pieces are most important? And you're just managing that the whole time and like figuring out what's important along the way. But going into it, I mean, even before you start, figuring out what goes on the bike and prioritizing that was a big deal in terms of, do I bring two tubes or three? Like I heard horror stories of people flatting both and you're out of tubes and then you're done. So like I probably had two full patch kits with me just out of paranoia. Just stuff like that, playing the game of what if and going through, you know, what goes in your saddlebag and all the stuff that you have to mitigate things was probably the biggest challenge for me, because you can play what if too far and then you're playing into like weird situations. And I said something about how I brought a spare pair of cleats and somebody's like, "Man, you just didn't care about weight at all." And I was like, "No, scared about losing a bolt on my shoe and then you can't pedal."
Yeah.
So like stuff like that you're just playing that game of trying to mitigate things. But riding at night and managing my lights was definitely difficult. Like you're checking battery length and comparing that to how many lumens are output. I discovered while I was out there that the speeds I was riding in Kansas were unlike the speeds I was doing at night at home practicing. And so what I thought I was going to be able to do when I was figuring out average times and how long it was going to take me to get to gas stations, I just really didn't think my speed was going to be so crushed in the darkness. And that's just, you know, a matter of how safe I wanted to be and being able to see clearly and not crash in Little Egypt and stuff like that. So yeah, that riding at night was definitely kind of an eye-opening thing. And the one thing that proved the biggest challenge to me out there was fighting sleep. I knew it was going to be a problem and what I was the most afraid of, honestly. And so there were four specific instances where I remember like having to snap out of it because it felt like I was like starting to dream while I was riding.
Whoa.
Yeah. And like I said, I expected it, but I really didn't know how it was going to feel. And yeah, that was probably the hardest thing to overcome was wanting to take a nap.
Yeah. The start time is one thing that always makes me raise my eyebrows because the race itself takes, you know, at least 25, 26, 20, 30 hours, depending on the rider. But you don't start until 3 p.m. And so presumably you're awake a lot of the day before you even start the race. Did you try to do anything in terms of like sleeping in like crazy day of or taking a late morning nap, or how did all that work?
Yeah, I tried, and I even tried for the couple weeks leading up to it. Like, I would just stay up really late at night and then wake up late and go to work later. But it didn't matter. That went out the window the second I woke up at 6:30 the morning of the race. I was like, oh, I didn't know. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, all of that stuff that you think you can plan for, like, your body just has a different idea. So I thought I could tweak it and fight it a little bit and figure that out, but honestly, the people that do 24-hour events and these long, like, tour divide and all that, they must know their body so well to figure out what's going to happen and how to, like, where to push the limit and where not to. But honestly, starting at 3 is probably a really safe decision for the event because I was tired the next day at, like, 11, 12, middle of the day when it was hot. If that had been at night, it would have been scarier and you're more likely maybe to fall asleep and crash and do something dumb. So it is probably a good thing that we're kind of going into the darkness with a little bit fresher brain.
Yeah. Do any stories come to mind? Did you have any especially memorable moments, whether it be, you know, experiences with other racers in the middle of the night or any funky gas station stops or animals you saw, anything like that?
I did see a lot of eyeballs, like when you're pedaling out there and you just see the two little eyes glowing in the distance and I have no idea what it is. but one really cool thing for me was actually riding with Lael. I mean, I think she's incredible. I told her before the event, I thought she was amazing. And it was a really unique experience to get our worlds colliding, you know, because I'm good at something less of a distance and she's good at something much longer. So it was for us to cross paths in that way was really fun and a challenge, I think, for both of us. And she told me, like, it was awesome to actually have somebody to race. And I said it was cool to just be with you for as long as I could. So I was shocked at how strong she was in the beginning. Like, I knew she would be, but I thought maybe she would pace herself and I would just go until I blew and then she would pass me, but she was there the whole time and I was shocked and amazed. It was really cool to ride with her. And I think, you know, there were a lot of weird things that happened out there. One stupid mistake I made was my helmet light. I forgot how to turn it on because sometimes it's like a double click or you press and hold. And I did the thing that changed the mode instead of turning it on. And so I changed the mode into a higher lumen output, which meant the battery was going to last less time. So, like, okay, 5 hours into the night, it starts flashing at me that the battery's low. I was like, oh, what am I going to do? So I took it off my helmet and plugged it in because I hadn't even gotten to Little Egypt yet. And I knew, because luckily I knew a lot of that north section from the course in 2019. And because I didn't want to crash and die, I just took it off and plugged it in and pedaled slowly with just my handlebar light. and these two guys come up on me, and I thought it was a car. I could have sworn it was a car because this guy had the brightest lights I've ever seen. And it was a godsend because I was with them for, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours. And through Little Egypt, we rode together, and luckily. But yeah, it was just nice little moments of, you know, riding a roller coaster the whole time. There's a lot of highs and lows.
Yeah. Did you... It's cool that you got to ride with people out there, because I know it's the every year I think the field gets bigger, but it's still comparatively a small field. Did you have any observations about like differences culturally between the people that participate in the 350 versus the 200? Just the like the vibe of the competitive field?
Yes and no. I mean, it felt like, I don't know, it just felt like a smaller version of the 200, honestly. There were still a lot of late, I mean, I don't know if I should say this, but there were a bunch of people like smoking pot. That was new to me. I did not know. Like, I did not know that was a thing, like straight up trying to get through the night on marijuana. But yeah, in terms of that was definitely different. I was like, so that's how you guys are getting through this.
That's yeah. Always been, I've heard that. I've heard that too about some folks in the bikepacking world. And it's a little bit odd to me. Like I've heard about, of course, you hear about weed, but you hear about mushrooms, LSD, like all kinds of pretty crazy stuff. Yeah. And to me, with my bikepacking experience last year, I got so insanely high just off of sleep deprivation and effort that like I did not want or need anything beyond that. So
exactly.
Anyway, but maybe we're just, like you said, weak when it comes to ultra
stuff. Yeah. Lesser being for sure.
That is very funny though. Sorry, I kind of interrupted you. Any other observations like culturally?
No, I mean, people were friendly, and I, like I said, it just felt like a smaller version. It felt like if you took 150 people from the 200 and started them on a longer distance. I probably spent 20 to 21 hours of the 29 completely alone. Like that was, yeah, not what I wanted, but that's just how things played out for me. And so the times that I was with people, everybody was really helpful and friendly and the same way that I would have expected in the 200. The crowd is definitely like tough as nails for sure. Like nobody's really complaining about stuff. Everybody's just kind of sucking it up and doing this thing that we put our mind to. So yeah, it was nice to just be with a bunch of people and nobody felt like, oh, this sucks, and oh, I'm gonna quit. Like, you didn't really hear that. Everybody was just very much like, we're doing this thing.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Are you doing it again next year?
The first thing I tweeted was that I was never doing it again. And then within 24 hours, I start thinking, like, I could probably do it better.
exactly.
Yeah, it's so
what
crazy.
Was the and that's, I mean, people who have done the 200 I think go through that experience also.
Yeah.
Maybe to a little bit lesser degree, but how did the suffering compare?
It's a different pain in a lot of ways. It's like not your legs, it's everything else. And so, you know, I was our course converges with the 100 and the 200 when you guys have about 30 miles left to go. And so once I got there, I was either passing or getting passed by a lot of people who were trying to finish before dark, because we were about like 2 hours until sunset, and just people were whinging and complaining and all things hurt and just trying to get to the finish line. And I was like, you guys need to suck it up. You know how much longer I have been out here?
That's so amazing.
Yeah, a lot of things hurt, but they weren't my legs. It was like everything else, my arms, you know, everything was very painful. But yeah, in terms of the suffering, is kind of just fighting sleep, trying to manage everything else that hurt except my legs, and mentally getting my head around the fact that I was riding for 350 miles.
For sure. If you're, I don't know if you want to keep this close to your vest, but are there adjustments that you'd make going into the next one if you would do it again?
Yes, I would. I mean, just from the strategic standpoint of like how hard I thought I was going to go in the beginning versus what I did do. I mean, honestly, I probably, looking back, I would have gone harder and tried to stay with that front group for longer. We got to the first gas station at mile 41 and I knew she was behind me. So she had popped off the back and I was like, I need to keep this because I'm not going to put as much effort as I did to get here and have that gap close because I have to like stand in line or something. So I ran in, grabbed a gallon of water and I stood in line for longer than I wanted to. And then I just took a 20 and threw that on the counter and walked out. I was like, keep the change. I just need this gallon. I need to go. Because you put so much work in it just to just stop, you ruin all of that. Right. And so there are decisions I would have made differently that, you know, looking back on it, probably would have helped me stay away for longer. And then maybe that would have changed. Could I have ridden with her in the night instead of losing her just before dark? I think that there are ways I could have made myself more competitive with Lael. Yes. And yeah, I think it's just like a couple of decisions that I made in the beginning that could change.
For sure. So I'm recording with the men's second place finisher right after you, Will. Nice. He crashed and like destroyed his arm. Like the amount of blood was insane. Broke his hand and rode the last 150 miles one-handed somehow.
See, that's what I mean by I'm way too, like that would not have happened.
What the hell? So anyway, my question to you is, do you have any questions for him? I think it would be kind of fun to have the two podium counterparts.
Yeah.
If nothing comes to mind.
Yeah. So this is a question I've been thinking a lot about. David got quite a few flats. He ended up having a really bad first 100 or so miles and got to that gas station with a bunch of other poor souls who had issues that night. And he's sitting there getting stuff and this guy sits down next to him and he looks at him and he just says, what is the motivation? And like, they just sat there in silence, like thinking about that question. Cause they're, you know, everybody who was there at like 2 a.m, something had gone wrong. And yeah, I've been thinking about that question a lot. Like what is the motivation for all of us really, but especially for Will, who, you know, you break your hand and you think most people probably would have sat that out and said, hey, I need to call this in and call it quits. But what was the motivation to push on?
Did you come up with an answer for yourself with that one?
No, I'm still thinking about it. I told Bobby Wintle the story and both of us were freaking out. We were like, we're going to get that tattooed on us. Like, this is something you should think about all the time.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, thanks. This was fun.
Yeah.
It was good to get a peek behind the curtain a little bit. Was there anything else that you think we should touch on before I let you go?
No, I think that's good. Is your thing in like the next few minutes?
Yeah. But I mean, we have time for one more topic if you want.
No, I wanted to know how your day was.
Oh, it was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a classic, like, challenging unbound day rather than I'm racing at the front unbound day. I had a really, really gnarly tire tear right before the first kind of selection point. So like mile 24, it was literally like 500 meters before the double track tight squeeze. So the pace had ramped up. Everyone was like battling for position, hole shot style. And I was right behind one other person and they hopped over a big rock and I went straight over it. And, it was just a complete snafu of like plugs didn't work, somehow broke the head off my valve off my tube, used all my CO2s. Basically it was just like a comedy of errors. All it was a flat, but it was just such a comedy of errors that it just snowballed into this really stupid thing. So I had to rely on other racers rolling by to give me stuff. Anyway, it took almost 20 minutes to fix. It was like 17, 18 minutes. And mentally, obviously that's hard because you know there's absolutely no way you're coming back from that. And so I just played a game of counting racers and saying hi to people and trying to give some words of encouragement and receive some words of encouragement. And yeah, I saw a lot of people. Yeah. I was very, very, very far behind. And it was a very, as you know, it was a very rough day to be alone with that wind.
Yeah.
But
was that your third finish?
Second finish, third try.
Oh, yeah.
I think we talked maybe after 2018 when I took my first swing at it, and I also had a bunch of mechanical issues and I didn't finish. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it was like not quite understanding the culture, but a lot of it was just a maturity thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I hadn't matured as like an ambassador or a role model at all yet.
Yeah.
And I was so results oriented.
Yeah.
And so I just couldn't be bothered really.
Yeah.
And it didn't even cross my mind to not finish this go around. And I actually thought of you during the, during the race, because I can't remember exactly the conversation, but we talked after 2018 and you asked how it went and I told you I didn't finish and I told you why. And you didn't say a whole lot, but I could just sense this little bit of like judgment mixed
disappointment.
With you. Yeah. And also mixed with like, you don't quite get it yet.
Yeah.
And like, it was okay. Like you weren't being condescending, mm-hmm. but I just remember that. And so I was like, oh, okay, I'm starting to pick up on some things here. Anyway, long story short, that was my day.
Yeah, nice.
But
no, that's good. Two finishes. That's good.
So it goes. I will try again.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was great to see you. Great to chat.
Yeah.
And congratulations. I mean, other than just doing the thing, like you finished second to potentially the best person that's ever done ultra. So in your first try.
Thanks.
Good job.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Yep. Catch you later.
Yep. See ya.
Bye. Thank you all for listening. And thank you to SwissRx for supporting the podcast. If you go to swissrx.cc/Payson or just use code Payson, you'll get yourself 30% off whatever you want on the website. I'm a big fan of their collagen powder. I've got some connective tissue achiness at this point in my career. I'm still on the younger side of 30, but this sport can be pretty hard on your body. It's a lot of miles, and at the end of the day, crashes add up. So I've been thankful for SwissRx in helping kind of restore some of the aches and pains that start to add up when you're really hard on your body. I'm sure I'm not alone in that regard. Big thank you to SwissRx. Again, just use code Payson or go to swissrx.cc/Payson for 30% off. Thanks to Lily McKelvin for editing and producing the show. Thank you all for listening. Please go leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe. Spread the word, word of mouth. We have another exciting media thing coming from the Stash House family. Stash House is my media production company. It is a film. It is our most involved film to date. It's tracing the story of when I rode all of Bentonville, Arkansas's trails in a day, the mountain bike capital of the world. I rode all of Bentonville, Arkansas's trails because I wanted to see if I could, but also I wanted to tell the story of the people of Bentonville and why it has become the incredible mountain bike destination that it has, and why the community seems so tightly knit and so united in their love of mountain biking and promoting mountain biking and spreading the love for mountain biking. So look for that soon. It'll be on my YouTube channel, which is just Payson McKelvin. It will come out in the next 10 days or so. Stay tuned. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.